There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, a couple things to talk to you about. First, Draft.com. If you like playing daily fantasy sports and you haven't tried out Draft.com, you really should. They do snake-style drafts just the way you like it. You don't have to worry about ownership, none of that good stuff. Tons and tons of fun. You get paid out the next day if you so choose. They also have auction-style drafts. They have best ball drafts that are some of the best in the industry. They do hockey, basketball, football, golf, and baseball. It's tons and tons of fun. It's Draft.com. Draft in your app store. And if you are new to Draft, use promo code SDSports. SD as in dog, sports. And you'll get an entry into a free $3 tournament of your choice. It can be a best ball, an auction, a snake style, whatever you prefer. Free $3 tournament of your choice using promo code SDSports. Also, if you want to get some better info, better tools, optimizers, Vegas tools, all that great stuff, plus a member Discord chat for this MLB DFS season, go to thequantedge.com. I'm a contributor over there, and I really enjoy the products they are putting out there. The Vegas tool I use a lot to show line movements throughout the day. The lineup optimizer, X-Stats tool, and much, much more coming out that way. The member Discord chat is always popping off. You get the MLB DFS season package for $124.99. You get the all-sports first month, so you get the NBA playoffs and baseball for $19.99, or a five-day all-sports trial for $5. Using promo code Bubba. So I go check that out over at thequantedge.com. Promo code Bubba with what you need for your DFS needs. Lastly, if you give a rating and review on iTunes, I'd much, much appreciate it. It would help us move up the rankings of the podcast world and it would mean a ton to me. With all that being said, welcome to Bench with Bubba, episode 169 with our buddy Max Freeze, talking about home runs per barrel, park factors, and so, so much more. Back everybody to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 169. Going to talk some fantasy baseball with a good friend of ours. He's been on the show before, and you can find his work at freestats.com, at Fantasy Pros, at pitcherlist.com. He's on Twitter at freestats. Max Freeze, welcome back to Benched with Bubba. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Bubba. Thanks for having me back on. Glad to be here, ready to talk some baseball with you.
Yeah, most definitely. I really, really enjoy your work. I seriously do. Like, the content's really, really good. I like what you're doing for your other sites as well. But your Freestat sites has a lot of good stuff on that. So why don't you kind of let everybody know what you got going on these days?
Yeah, so I try to write a weekly starting pitching streaming article that's 25% owned and under. Keep those stats on those streamers every week. I try to get like a weekly rundown. That's usually been a bi-monthly at this point. But then I also just try to throw in some StatCast data, some random articles. I've did a home run park factors using barrels recently. So I just try to, anything that comes to mind, player profiles, whatever, I just try to keep those keep those flowing, keep the content coming on the site. So appreciate the kind words.
No, no problem. When I see something I like, I like to shout it out when I can. And we will talk about your home run ballpark factor deal here pretty soon. It's going to be pretty interesting. The recent episodes I've had different guests on with their different stats they've been developing. It's pretty cool to see all these growing trends that we can utilize. StatCast, another really cool data is to kind of fine-tune things or maybe try to find an edge elsewhere. So it's fun to open up the discussions for this, especially in a world of baseball where the home run becomes so much more prevalent than it once was. So you really need to find those hot spots where you can. So we'll dig into that in a second. But before we do so, for once, we don't have a ton of injuries to talk about. I know I probably jinxed it. We're going to finish recording and like four guys are hitting the IL. But like for once, I don't have one injury to talk about here anymore. Delino DeShields Jr., option to AAA. We got three things to talk about the Rangers. We'll start with DeShields here. Goes to AAA. A lot of people liked him for late round steals, upside. He even stole a bag the day he got demoted. What's your thoughts on DeShields? If you're a DeShields owner, what do you do with him?
Yeah, I've been a DeShields guy and a fan of DeShields for a while now. He just hasn't really panned out. So it's kind of disappointing to see him back in AAA again. But, I mean, he's actually looked decent as far as, like, his plate discipline. He's got a career-high walk rate. His K percentage is down. His contact is up. I think he's stolen eight bases already. He just can't seem to keep the average up. He can't be consistent. There's no power there. So, you know, he's kind of a speed grab in deep leagues. I think if you're in a shallow league, you just got to let him go. There's just nothing you can do. He's kind of an AL only or 15 team and deeper, just a stash on the bench if you need speed. It's kind of my thoughts on him. I wish he would turn into something more, but he just hasn't gotten there.
Yeah, it seems every offseason when we're all doing our draft prep, like the line of the Shields is in probably 80% or more of write-ups about late-round steals targets because we all see the potential there. It just hasn't happened yet. Malik Smith got demoted a week ago or so. Both those guys, Malik's actually playing pretty well already in AAA in the week he's been down there. I see him coming up eventually, like sooner than later, I'd imagine. Never know. Would you rather hold on to Malik Smith or the line of the Shields if you had to pick just one?
Yeah, I'd rather hold on to Malik Smith. I think he's got a better path to playing time. I think he'll be up sooner. And I think he's just been a little bit more consistent than the Shields. Not that he's been great, but last year was pretty good for Malik. And I think he's got a little bit more stolen base upside. I think he can, he could touch that 40 mark, not this year because of the way he started and the way he's sent down. But I just like his upside for speed. So I'd grab him over to Shields if you're stashing speed and he's available on your wire.
Okay. I like that quite a bit. With the Shields leaving town, Hunter Pence, yes, the Hunter Pence who signed a minor league contract in the spring to try to make the club. He made the club, and now he's starting every day. He's at 344 on the year coming into today's action. He already went deep tonight against Wade Miley, a two-run home run, as we record on Thursday. He's playing really, really well. Like, I don't know if it's a renaissance with playing with all the youth or what it is, but how fantasy relevant right now is Hunter Pence for you? Like, what kind of leagues would you need to look to be in to look at adding a Hunter Pence?
I think right now you've got to add him in 12-team and deeper, but I think it's short-term for those shallower leagues while he's hot. But he's worth a shot for 15-team and deeper because he's playing every day. I looked at his metrics. He's got a 13% barrel rate, and his expected batting average is actually .359, so it's better than his current average. I don't think that can hold up. Those are a lot better numbers than what he's shown over the last several years. But, I mean, take him while he's hot, even in the shallow leagues, because, he can fill a hole that for someone who might be it's slumping right now. Just grab him for a couple of weeks while he's hitting before he slows down. So, I don't like him long term. I don't think he's going to keep it up. But, you got to pick up these guys while they're hot and take their stats while they're giving them to you. So,
yeah, I totally agree. Like, I'm going to play the yin and the yang of this one as a Giants fan who's watched him for many years and appreciates everything he did for the Giants. He was always so injury prone. He'd have his hot streaks. He'd play well. He'd get hurt. He'd never really be the same. So far this year, he's hot. He hasn't gotten hurt. He hasn't played every day either. So now he's playing every day. We'll keep an eye on that. Being in Texas will help him a lot. It'll elevate the offense. But like you said, I don't see him sustaining this long term. I think he's a great buy now. Ride it while you can. I completely agree with everything you said. It's fun to watch Hunter Pence get going because he He's a wild one out there, but
he's kind of jittery, isn't he?
He's extremely jittery. Yeah, he's a special breed. Breed, that man. But it'll be curious to see how long he keeps us going for. If he goes all year, it'd be one of those feel good stories. But I'm with you. I'm ready for the other shoe to drop. And at the same time, if Delino starts playing well in the minors, I'm pretty sure they want him to play every day over 100 pits anyways. So he'd probably get his chance again as well. So, ride him while you can. Go pick him up. Give him a little fab bid over the weekend and see what happens.
Yeah.
The last piece of Texas news here, Ronald Guzman got activated from the IL. Big-time power bat was really starting to swing it well right before he got hurt. It might take time to get back. Who knows? What's your thoughts on Ronald Guzman? Because he does have the power, just we haven't seen any consistency yet.
Right, and that's kind of what concerns me. He's typically not the kind of player that I like to go after in fantasy just because he's kind of a free swinger, lots of Ks, low walks, feels like he goes into a lot of slumps, but then he gets extremely hot. I think he's had a couple of multi-homer games, and he has some weeks where he hits three or four homers, but I think that there's lulls in between there that you just want to pull your hair out. So, I mean, I don't know how long it'll take to get that power back coming off the IL. So I don't know if I'm rushing to grab him unless you're really needing power. And if you can grab him when he goes on those hot streaks, that's the time to own him. Otherwise, I think he's kind of a deep league ad, a power ad. I'm just not a huge fan of his, but I'm interested to see what he can do coming off the IL.
Yeah, I think he's kind of like you said, a deep league, maybe a streamer type guy. I think if you see that, you know, it's almost like playing the Coors effect. If you see them having, you know, two series in a week in Texas, you kind of look at that kind of stuff and realize the upside in that matchup. But I haven't seen him put it together yet either, and that's the troubling part. And the overall numbers don't point to big time stuff from him. But hey, if you're struggling for power and you need a boost, go give him a chance, I guess.
Yeah.
It's been Prospect Palooza the last few weeks all over the fab market, and I'm not going to get into the argument that many are having about, you know, did you blow your money on fab? Were you stupid? Were you smart? Everyone's got their fab's opinions, and that's great. I have mine. Others have theirs. That's the point of the game. But what I do want to ask you is Carter Kieboom was one of the big boys, and so was Nate Lowe. And Nate Lowe just came up and got fab bid this last week, and now they're both down. These guys are really good prospects. The fact they got sent down, to me, should not say that they're bad ball players. They're really good prospects, and the time is not theirs at the moment. If you own those two guys, how are you treating them? Because if you drop them, it might be as expensive to get them back again, and you might not have the money. So do you try to hold them, or what are you doing with those two prospects?
I think if you spent that fab, some of those bids were pretty crazy, $200, $400 in some cases. I think you probably got to hold them for a couple of weeks, because I think if you just let them go, the next time they get called up, you're just not going to have the money to get them. So I think you've got to hold them in deeper leagues. I think Kieboom just doesn't seem ready to me. I know he had that couple of big games with home runs, but he just seems his strikeout rate is just extremely high. I just don't know if he's ready. And once Turner's back, I think that Dozier's a guy who can heat up in the second half. He's a second half type of guy. So I don't know if they're going to bring him up to play him just a couple days a week. There have to be some injuries on that infield for Kieboom to get called back up. And Nate Lowe, I'm surprised they sent him down. I kind of like him. I liked his he hadn't homered or anything, but his Statcast numbers look pretty good. He's clearly a big guy that can swing the bat and take a walk. But I guess they like G-Man Choi over there at first base and DH. But I do think Lowe gets another chance. So I'd say hold him for sure for a couple of weeks. Hopefully he gets called back up. But just kind of disappointed it got sent down so quickly.
Yeah, it was very, very disappointing because the hype is real. These guys are very, very talented. And I think in time, we are going to see them be very good ball players. Just might not be this year now. I agree with you, Nate Lowe, I think, comes up rather soon. Maybe not like in the next couple of weeks, but maybe in a month or so. He's going to have a spot in that roster. It's a matter of G-Man Choi going into a slump. And then we finish things there because he should be playing every day over Choi. It's just, I guess, no options. This is how the Rays do things. This is why they keep the farm systems they do. So that was just a process of the situation. But Lowe's a very good ball player. I would do everything in my power if you bought Lowe to hang on to Lowe. As long as you got roster spots for him, hold him. Keyboom if you have to. Keyboom, like you said, when Turner comes back, it just shrinks playing time even more. Defoe's always going to be a super utility guy in the way. As long as Brian Dozier's semi-hitting like he is now, there's really nowhere for Keyboom right now. I was kind of surprised when they brought him up earlier. He's the one that we might see later in the year as kind of a helper, where I think when Lowe comes up again, it might be an actual role. So that's kind of where I see it as well. So we're kind of on the same page there.
Yeah.
All right, last piece of news. I put it on the outline last night, and then news came out today. Max Fried, who got hit in the hand by a line drive in his last game, threw a side session today. He felt fine. It's just a bruise. He's scheduled to go on Sunday. Just for fun, what have your thoughts been on what we've seen from Max Fried so far this year?
Yeah, I kind of like him. He looks kind of like his control looks real good. He's got a 67% first pitch strike rate, and he's added a slider this year. He's only throwing it about 10% of the time, but you know, I think that's a nice add for him. Maybe try and boost some of his strikeout rates. But yeah, he's not going to strike out 10 guys in an outing, but I think he's got really good control. Definitely valuable in mixed leagues. I kind of like him going forward. He gets ground balls. You know, just not super exciting, but a guy that you're going to want on your roster because he's not going to kill your ratios. He's going to help you out. So I kind of like him going forward.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed having Fried on my roster in TGFBI. It was disappointing when he got hit around this last start and left early. But if it's one every like four starts, I'll take it from that guy because, like you said, his ratios are great. And he doesn't really get the strikeouts you'd hope for. He's done it occasionally. Like, he's more of a kind of pitch to contact location type guy, as you're saying so far. You said the development of that slider could help with that big time. So it'll be interesting to see how that works. But I think this kid's super talented. It's him and Soroka are going to be really, really good for that team. And they still have so many other weapons, Bryce Johnson, Kyle Wright, Gohara. There's a lot going on there in that farm system. So I was worried at first the way they were running through guys. Like, after one bad start, they take a guy out and bring another guy up. But I think it feels like Soroka and Fried, they have a little more wiggle room with their spot in the rotation for now. So that's pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about your new little stat metric that you have developed that really has my attention, and I want you to help make a kind of dummy like myself understand it even more as I keep learning more and more about the StatCast world and everything. But when new things like this come out, I need a little more guidance on how they work just to make sure I'm not missing something. You used home run park factors using StatCast barrels, like home runs per barrel rate. First off, for those wondering, and I'll let you get into the whole thing here, but first off, explain to people like what, for that might not know, like what an actual barrel is, why a barrel's good, and how like home run to barrel rate works before we get into the park factors of it.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the barrel statistic is basically the best metric that we have that correlates with power and home runs. It was developed in 2015, and it's kind of a sliding scale. It's based on exit velocity and launch angle. And kind of the it's at least 95 miles per hour at an ideal launch angle. Don't know the exact launch angle offhand. It's in the 20s. But as you hit the ball harder at higher exit velocities, that launch angle kind of expands. So it's kind of a sliding scale. And the results of a barrel are at least a .500 batting average and I think a .1500 slug. So it's extremely valuable, extra base hits, home runs. I think they averaged out in 2016 at like over an .800 batting average and over a 2.6 slugging percentage. So it's like, I mean, it's basically averages out between a double and a triple. So yeah, a barrel is basically a ball that as a hitter you want to hit, and as a pitcher you want to avoid. They're basically ideal hit balls.
Okay, so when you're looking at the home run to barrel rate, how do you come across getting that stat, and why does that stand out to you? Obviously, for this.
Yeah, when this offseason I started looking at some players that like I just took the average from 2018 home runs per barrel. So I just pulled data, the total number of barrels for the entire league. And then I pulled data that were the total number of barrels and the total number of home runs, and just came up with home runs per barrel. And so what I was doing is trying to look for overperformers and underperformers based on that average statistic. But I kind of I kind of decided to expand it a little bit and said, you know, the sample might not be big enough. So I just took all the data from 2015 to 2018. And then the data that I pulled, I don't want to get too technical, but basically total barrels, home runs and barrels together, and then non-barreled home runs, because they're all kind of factored in there. And then I ran some Z-scores for each park for each season and compiled the data. I factored in the non-barreled home runs and then kind of came up with a formula for these park factors. So it's kind of something that I was starting to look at and saying, you know, some of these players are hitting their home run per barrel rate is basically one. And the data that I found, the average home run per barrel is 57%. That's the league average since 2015. So, you know, anybody who's well above that is kind of outperforming their home run per barrel rate. So that's when I started thinking, well, maybe the parks got something to do with it. So that's kind of what started this kind of whole research thing that I was starting to do. So it's pretty general. It doesn't take into account weather or like batted ball direction or handedness. So it's just kind of in general, how many home runs are allowed per barrel in each ballpark. So that's kind of the general idea of it. If that's starting to make sense, I don't know if that's.
Oh yeah. No, it makes a ton of sense to me. Like when you look at the article, I'll link the article in the podcast notes for people to go look at. And it's like you said, like 57% of home runs per barrel is usually kind of how it works out. 57%. You showed numbers for the last 2015 through 18. For those that don't know, StatCast started in 2015. So That's as far back as we can go with data. But, you know, you got the juice ball year in 17 where it was almost 62%, and it just jumps off the page. And the rest of them, 56, 57, 54, basically, kind of more. So we're more in line this year already. You mentioned we're up 55%. So you're seeing that similar home run to fly ball, or home run per barrel. When you made these park factors, you said you did them for the last 3 years combined. Is that what these numbers are when I look at the park factor grid, or 4 years combined?
Yeah. Sorry, I think you may have cut out there. But what I was doing is I was trying to find these outliers and some players that may have outperformed who their home run per barrel rate and might regress this year or vice versa. And so when I had these park factors, I was really surprised to come up with, like, for example, Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati. I think everybody knows that Cincinnati is a good place to hit, but the data that I came up with tells me that it's the best park for home runs in Major League Baseball. It had the highest home run per barrel rate in 3 out of the 4 years, and the second most non-barreled home runs that I call, like, cheap home runs. Second most of any ballpark. Yeah. So in total, it was 2.2 standard deviations above the mean. So just to kind of give you an idea what that means, Yankee Stadium was the second best park for home runs per barrels, and that was only about 1.5 standard deviations above the mean. And Colorado was third. So, I mean, it kind of passes the eye test when you see Cincinnati, New York, and Colorado as those ballparks that are the top three. But it really was surprising to see Great American Ballpark as high as it was. And so what that kind of can do for fantasy, like when I was doing this research, I was seeing guys like Jose Peraza, Scooter Gennett. These guys were overperforming their home run per barrel rate. But when I did this data, I kind of started looking at it and say, maybe it's legit because they play half their games in Great American Ballpark where their barrel rates are extremely high. So, you know, you can kind of take that into account when you're kind of analyzing some players. And for me, it's kind of a concern for like Joey Votto, for instance. If he can't hit home runs in his current environment, it's, you know, it's kind of telling me, where can he hit home runs? Is he kind of towards the end of the road here? You know, so that's kind of a concern going forward for him, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point when you look at it that way. There's a lot to like in that regard. You mentioned cheap homers and you got it in your article there. I don't want to create work for you, but do you have like a spreadsheet somewhere that we could look like what stadiums have the most cheap homers? Because, you know, everyone's ranting and raving about Nick Senzel right now. He had the 2-home run game against the Giants the other day. And, you know, you either love Nick Senzel and you're just happy for him, or you have the curmudgeons of the world that said, oh, these are cheap, Great American small park home runs. That would be an interesting factor as well. Yeah. For like guys that play DFS and everything. It's like, okay, they're going into this ballpark. you know, cheap home runs are even like stronger here, stuff like that.
Well, yeah, that's huge. Yeah, you know about DFS. And so, yeah, for instance, like I do have a huge spreadsheet with a bunch of data on it. And Cincinnati is the second highest cheap. It allows the second most cheap home runs, for instance. But for the park that does allow the most cheap home runs was Minute Maid Park in Houston. Those Crawford boxes, those are only about 315 down the line and 362 in left center. Yeah. And so when you're looking at guys like Alex Bregman last year, he had 30 homers, but his average home run distance was only 384 feet.
Okay.
So you're kind of like, well, how's he doing that? Well, it's the Crawford boxes. He's pulling 33% of his fly balls and getting these cheap home runs. So that's why, you know, you can say, well, maybe he'll regress based on those Statcast numbers. That's what someone, you know, who's just looking at the numbers might say, hey, yeah, he's going to regress because his barrel rate didn't match his home run rate and he's not hitting the ball that hard. But he's doing a great job of pulling the ball down the line and getting those cheap home runs. And a guy like Jose Altuve is doing the same thing. It's interesting, when he was healthy, he was able to hit 20-plus homers in Houston. And he's kind of looking like the same guy this year, especially with the ball being whatever the properties are of the ball this year. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Altuve back over the 20 home run mark this year either. So yeah, you know, for DFS, you know, right-handed pull hitters are the guys you want, if that's, you know, something you're looking into.
Yeah. See, stuff like that, or say you want to be contrarian and there's a good pitcher on the mound, but it's in a ballpark where cheap home runs happen. When I can kind of play against them and try to get different that way. Like there's ways to analyze it, but going back to like season long, when you mentioned that about these ballparks, like, you know, Houston with the cheap seats, you know, Cincinnati rates where it does. We know New York, the Yankees, you know, the short porch and right, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Having numbers like this can be really helpful, especially like in the off season when guys change teams, when you want to make an argument for like, you know, hey, I'm going to take this guy 30 picks earlier or something, just per se. And people always go, you're crazy. Now you can point to stuff like this that we never really had before. And you're like, well, this leads to this, and he could easily get like another 10 home runs this year or something. And that elevates him so much farther up in the rankings or whatever. So it's really interesting to have stuff like this instead of just the normal, he barrels up a ball. Because if we're just looking at his barrel rates on the Statcast sheet like we like to do, it's in a vacuum because it doesn't specify where he hit him at or what ballparks he's in, who he faced, so on and so forth. It says he has this many barrels. That's all we know. So this does give a lot of interesting aspects to it. And I know, like you said, because you have all your graphs and everything and your spreadsheets, what other ways do you plan on using this? Because you mentioned, you know, you looked into Cincinnati, you've obviously looked into other guys, but where do you plan on taking this stat forward?
Yeah, I think it's pretty general right now. So it'd be great to look at like handedness or where the balls are hit, you know, left, center, right. And kind of break it down even further. I know that the sample sizes get much smaller when you're talking about the number of barrels hit to each field. So I don't know how those are going to correlate, but it is something that the more data we have, the more those numbers might make a little bit of sense. So maybe after it might be in 2019 or, you know, after the after this 2019 season, start looking into those kind of numbers. You know, weather is always a factor. So that could play a role as well. But, you know, definitely want to look into kind of directional hitting is probably the next step, because, you know, that'll help for season long. It'll help for DFS. And like you're saying, for when guys change teams, like when Yelich switched, I think we all knew he was going from a bad park to a good park, but I don't think anybody saw that type of jump. And now he's hitting more fly balls. So, yeah, I mean, it's just something to play around with that, you know, Statcast gives off so much good information and data that, you know, there's no reason not to use it. So, yeah, it's just a start, and then we'll go from here, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting when you look at it, because you mentioned the ones up top, you know, the top 10 makes sense. Cincinnati, Yankees, Rockies, Orioles, White Sox, Astros, Brewers, Mets kind of stands out a little bit there. You think City Park's not crazy, and San Diego's ninth. Like, so that goes to show you some things. When you go to the flip side on the bottom, you know, like Boston's 23rd, and all you think about the Mashers they have there, St. Louis 27th really stands out to me.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the takeaways when you put this together that kind of stood out? Like, wow, this is, you know, Goldie went from Arizona, which is 21st in the humidor, mm-hmm. all the way to 27th in St. Louis. And all you heard when he got traded was better ballpark.
Right. Yeah. I think with so Arizona, that's just the 1 year of the humidor data. I didn't include the three previous years before the humidor. So that there might be some variance in Arizona. So his might end up being a pretty neutral move. But yeah, San Diego. So Petco in San Diego was really surprising. I wasn't as surprised with Citi Field in New York because they did move the walls in prior to the 2015 season. So obviously that's helped their home run. I didn't expect their home run rate to be this high. But San Diego, I've always looked at them. I've been writing streaming articles for a couple of years, and a lot of times it's a bonus if a pitcher's, going in San Diego. I think overall it's a pretty neutral park, including like singles, doubles, triples, but it shows here that it's above average in terms of home run rate. So that one really surprised me. And Boston being as low as it was surprised me, but looking more at Boston, Boston really kind of inflates BABIP, because it's got some interesting deep dimensions in center and right center, but it's also got the green monster in left. So you get a lot of cheap doubles there. But it is difficult to hit the ball out in center and in right center at Boston. So I kind of can see it once I got the data, I could kind of understand where it came from and where it makes sense, So those are kind of some ones. I know, San Francisco is the worst park. Yeah. Unless your name is Barry Bonds. So.
Yeah, I get tilted there. Like I tweeted it many times. I tweeted it recently.
I saw that.
I think Brandon Belt is a great, great hitter. Like I really do think he's a good ball player and can hit. Yeah. Like I think he's got, 30 plus on run power in a real ballpark. Yeah. He really does. And people think I'm crazy, but it's just like I watched the one that Darren Williams from Baseball Savant tweeted out, and I quote tweeted it. He hit that thing to the corner of the corner in Triples Alley where it's 421.
Right.
It's like, that's a home run, I think, in 29 other ballparks.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. That's crazy. That's a rough place to play.
Yeah. Like you said, unless your name's Barry Bonds.
For hitters, for sure. Yeah.
But it just doesn't work.
I think. Yeah.
So,
and especially for lefties, that's another aspect. I don't think it's as bad for righties, and this better than I do,
for sure.
But I think it's worse for lefties, and so that, if I start going to the next step, that's the data that'll come out. And I think some of these look pretty, if you look at other home run park factors, they're somewhat similar, but I think everyone is different. I know Saras did one that used X stats. High drive rate, which was Andrew Perpetua's, who's now with the Mets, kind of his high drive rate is kind of like barrels, but I think they're hit more frequently. So and even our comparing ours, they're a little bit different. So they're all different, but I think using barrels, I think, is the best metric to use for home runs. So it makes sense to me to use barrels for park factors.
Yeah, because in the end, we do like line drives, and I like the work they did over there. I'm not going to dismay that at all.
Oh, no.
But when we're playing the fantasy game, we want long balls. That's pretty simple. We want home runs. So, however, the best way to get to the home run is, which for now what we see is barrels. That makes sense. This makes a lot of sense what you have going here. So it's cool to see. I'm looking forward to seeing where it keeps going, what you do with the next. Just even like the simple updates whenever you update it, even at the end of the year when you update it, just to see how – maybe a couple ballparks switched around or something.
Right.
Because all things can change, especially with this lively baseball. It'll be really interesting to see what happens here.
Yeah, things are going to be different after this year, I think. We might see these career highs everywhere, even worse than or better, depending on how you look at it, than 2017.
Yeah, then it'll get really fun because they'll do just what they did last year, or in 7 or whatever, in 18, last year, and they'll screw the ball up again. And then we'll get back to pitching, which is fine. But it's like you've trained your brain again to start, planning differently when you're playing the game. And now it's going to be the whole flip side of things all over again. So
yeah,
that'll be
makes it hard,
exciting.
Larry.
Yeah. People think what we do is, and it is, we do it for fun because we love doing it. But I think it's easy. And trying to figure this game out is, I try to explain to people, baseball is the hardest game to predict that I could think.
Yeah, for sure. Yep.
All right. Any final thoughts on this, or do we want to move on? Because I can sit here and talk to you about it all day long. It's very intriguing, but don't know how many other factors you have here without going specifically ballpark by ballpark.
Right. Yeah. No, I just encourage people to check it out. Let me know if you have any suggestions. I'm open to looking at expanding it, you know, any way that I can. So this is just kind of a general way to get the information out there and kind of move forward from there. So.
Yes, everybody go check it out. Again, I'll tweet out the link, and I'll try to remember it. If I don't, I'll add it later to put it in the show notes for everyone to have easy access to it. It's really cool stuff that Max is working on there, so go check that out. Let's get into some players that have either been really hot, really cold. Their names come up a lot in the industry. Just kind of people are curious on what to do with them. And we'll kick it off with Colin McHugh, who has been in quite the rough spot. He's given 3 earned runs or more in 4 straight starts. He started out the year outstanding, and it's just been a disaster after disaster after disaster. What are you doing with Colin McHugh right now?
Oh, yeah. See, I was high on McHugh coming into the season because I know that the Astros do a great job with their pitching staff, so I was excited about him. Grabbed him in a few spots. He was looking good. His K rates jumped up. He increased his slider usage. So everything was looking good. But, man, he just kind of falls apart. His home run rate's right around 2 right now. I don't know. I'm concerned they could move him back to the pen just because they have other options. Forrest Whitley sitting in the minors. I don't know if he's quite ready yet, but Peacock's been – well, he had a dominant start last night, but, you know, they've got other options. So I'm concerned he could go back to the bullpen and be a long man. But, you know, all of his swing metrics look good. Over at Pitcherlist, they have developed a called strikes plus swinging strike rate, and he's got 31.2%, which is well above average. So he's got solid stuff, and that's largely due to the slider. But I just don't know, you know, if he can curb the home runs. And that's the concern right now.
Well, and you just mentioned that Houston's one of the top park factors in home runs per barrel rate. So
the cheap ones.
Yeah. So it's just like, yeah, if he's off by any amount, those balls are going to fly and trouble will ensue. So
right. The metrics won't be.
Yeah, something to keep in mind there because I was big on him also, like you were going into the year. I have him in a couple spots as well, and I love the early start, and it's been quite disappointing. And I'm at the point, are you thinking it's just time to cut bait with him, or do you keep him in 15-teamers? What are you doing with him?
Yeah, I'm going to hold on to him for now. I mean, it really has just been a couple of bad starts. I'm not going to jump ship yet. I think depending on matchups, and I know it didn't matter because it was the Royals last time, but I'm not going to cut bait yet. If they put him in the pen, then yes, but I'm going to wait and see what the decision is on that.
Okie doke. Let's go to the Giants here. Mac Williamson got the call a couple days ago, proceeded to go deep in Colorado. We know Mac's got crazy power. In his last minor league game, he hit 3 home runs. He's always had power. He was off to a good start last year before he got hurt. Never bounced back. I know I've heard a lot of chatter, 15-team leagues, and all these go run out and get him. 5 outfield leagues go get him. I kind of agree with that. What's your thoughts on Mac Williamson right now?
I agree with NL only and 15-team leagues just as a flyer. Overall, I'm not really buying it. The homer, you know, it's – getting a homer in Coors right away and kind of inflates your value a little bit. It's kind of like when the rookies get called up and hit a home run, everyone runs to the waiver wire and throws their fab at him. I don't think Mac's not going to get huge, fab bids or anything like that. But if you can add him for cheap in a deep league, I would. But what I was looking at and I want to get your thoughts on this, Tyler Austin. Is he playing a little bit of outfield now? Or is he someone that looks like he might get some playing time?
Or is that's the weird part. When they first got him up, he played first base because he hadn't gotten the outfield prep. So they've been belting the outfield, and they were going to work him into the outfield. Now he's playing the outfield, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. So Austin is getting some outfield. I believe he played first today when he hit 2 home runs. But he is going to play some outfield, yes. So that's why it's kind of interesting. They've been calling up Gerber. He went back down, I believe. They called up Mac Williamson. They do have Tyler Austin, though, to play the outfield and play first base to spell belt from time to time. The playing time, just I don't know how consistent it'll be, but I know where you're going with this, yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they're both kind of all or nothing power, so it really just depends on how the playing time shakes out. That's kind of the whoever seems to get the most playing time is the one that I'd go after. But I don't see it right now. I don't see which one. I don't know if Austin can man the outfield full time though. So, you know, Williamson might be the ad.
Yeah, I think Williamson's the guy that'll get most of the playing time unless something weird happens. Maybe they'll find a way to get them both out there. But I think they're going to want to put Mac there for now. That's my guess. All right, let's go to a guy that we've been high on many times. He's let us down many times. But Lucas Giglio, he's doing it again, Max. He started out the year rough. His last three starts have been pretty darn good. 5Ks or more in all three appearances. His last two have been really good. He dominated the Indians in Cleveland his last time out. 7 1/3, 3 hits, no earned, 8 strikeouts. He has a 4.06 ERA with a 3.67 xFIP right now. Things are looking good for Lucas Giolito. What's your thoughts on him? Because he's probably available in a lot of leagues right now.
Right. Yeah. He looks pretty good. I think his slider's solid. It looks like he might have something with his changeup. It's got an 18% swinging strike rate and a 38% K rate on it. And he's increased the usage on it, and he's ditched that sinker, which sinkers are just terrible, especially his. So that's a good thing. He's still struggling with walks. And, you know, home runs, I think, are going to be an issue with him too. But, you know, he's definitely a guy that I would grab for the back end of your rotation. He looks like he's kind of improving those K numbers. The metrics look pretty good on him. So I've never been a big fan, but, you know, kind of looking at what he's done so far, it kind of has me somewhat believing. So there's no reason to not take a shot on him. He's looking pretty good.
Yeah, I'm with you. Giolito's a guy I've gambled on from time to time in years past, and I jump back on that train right now if you can find a way to get him. Let's talk about another guy that's been, you know, on the fantasy radar for a few years now, Jake Odorizzi. He seems to be figuring it out right now. 2 earned runs or less in 4 straight starts, back-to-back. No earned runs, 13 innings, no earned runs combined in his last two at the Yankees and at home against Houston. 15 Ks over those 13 innings pitched. Been looking really good, but doesn't have a 4.49 xFIP to go with his 2.78 ERA. What's your thoughts on Jake Odorizzi right now?
Yeah, he's kind of had a similar pitch mix to the past. He's added a little bit more on his curveball and fewer cutters, but he's increased his swing and strike rate by about 2.5%, and it's mostly because of his fastball, which is surprising because people are going away from the fastball because they get hit hard, and he's actually got pretty incredible 14.3 swinging strike rate, which is kind of what you're seeing from breaking pitches from most pitchers. So that's pretty impressive. But what kind of on the negative side, his curveball is actually pretty bad. And he is an extreme fly ball pitcher. So a 4.9% home run per fly ball rate is probably not going to last in given the current conditions. So while I like the fact that his fastball, which is his main pitch, is getting swings and misses, I just think the home run rate's going to regress quite a bit given, you know, summer months coming and the fact that he gives up nearly 50% fly ball. So I think he's going to be a guy that gives some real bad starts.
Would you rather Giolito or Odorizzi?
That's a tough call. I might lean Giolito.
Yeah, it's kind of where I'm leaning there. There's more upside there.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah, it's ugly either way.
I'll go with the younger guy.
you already know when you set that roster on Sunday night or Monday morning, you're going to be shaking your head like, oh, I don't feel good about this.
Yeah, exactly.
That's just regardless of which one it is. Let's talk about New York Yankees. They've been having injury after injury this year, but they keep getting it done out of some of the most unusual suspects. Lately, it's Gio Urshela. I might have butchered that, but he had another big 8th-inning RBI single tonight that gave them the lead that they needed, that insurance run. There's a lot to like here with this kid, hitting .346 in a short time with 2 home runs. What's his fantasy viability for you? Because you'd imagine when, you know, someone comes back, he's out, but right now – Miguel Andujar has been shaky. The middle infield's still kind of a mess. He's got playing time.
Yeah, he does. I mean, in the expected metrics look good. I mean, his expected batting average is right where his right in the mid 350s. So I mean, it's legitimate. But he's kind of, for fantasy purposes, it just doesn't look like there's a ton of upside, especially if the playing time goes away. And I know Andujar has been DHing, so
or playing first base. So I think, you know, once Judge and Stanton come back, the DH is going to kind of not going to be an option anymore, and Andujar is going to have to go over to third. So I think he's going to lose his playing time. And I think just the overall profile, you know, he's a high line drive rate guy, low fly ball rate, doesn't really have speed. So I don't know if there's a ton of upside with him. He's just kind of a plug and play right now, kind of a volume guy while he's getting playing time. So, you know, I'd grab him in deep leagues for now, but once the big boys get healthy, I think he's back on the wire.
Yeah, that's exactly what I think. I don't think he's a long-term fix. It is interesting, though. If you need depth, he definitely is in play for his name, not to ignore. At first, I just ignored him because I'm like, what is Gino Urshela doing? He's 27 years old, and he's finally getting his break. That's not normal for the big leagues. It's working. It's working.
Right, yeah.
Let's go to Cincinnati. We've got a couple pitchers to talk about first. We'll start with Tyler Mahle, starting pitcher, been pitching outstanding the last couple times out. He at Oakland pitched really well the other night, just got out-dueled by this guy named Mike Fiers when he threw a no-hitter. It's kind of crazy how that works. But he's looked really, really well, and he gets the Giants this week, and so his numbers will look even better most likely after that. But are we buying into Tyler Mahle and what he's been doing right now?
Yeah, I kind of like Mahle. He's actually been I probably had him on my streamers article 3 out of the last 4 weeks, and it's typically on the road. He's actually had 5 road starts. All his last 5 starts have been road starts. So, you know, as I said, Cincinnati's not a great park to pitch in, especially that for home runs. Pitch. But on the road, I think he's definitely a guy I'd be pitching. He's got a 21% K minus walk rate, and it's interesting because he's got a low swinging strike rate, but his called strikes plus swinging strikes is 31%, which is well above average. So he's getting guys, he's freezing guys with pitches in the zone, which is huge. He's added a curveball and he gets ground balls. So I think, you know, he's a guy that I'd definitely be streaming on the road. He's never owned more than, 10%. That's based on, I think, you know, Fantasy Pros consensus. But he's a guy that I'm always streaming. He's probably picked up in most 15 team leagues because he's been pitching well. But if he's on the wire and he's pitching on the road, I'd pick him up.
Yeah, I like that quite a bit. I've been a fan of his. Even last year, he showed signs of it, but he was still kind of figuring it out this year. He definitely looks a lot better. And you mentioned the road starts. That helps a ton. His teammate, Anthony DeSclafani, same love. He's got 6 or more Ks and 4 straight starts. His last 3 road starts, 5 2/3 no runs at the Mets, 6 innings no runs at St. Louis, 6 innings 1 run at San Diego. Been very, very good. The home starts, not so much, but like you said, you come to expect that. What's your thoughts on DeSclafani this year?
Yeah, it's kind of similar to Mahle, where I'm kind of streaming him on the road and maybe against weak opponents at home. He has increased his swinging strike rate and K rate, but I'm just a little bit concerned about his walk rate going up. His first pitch strike is down. And so, you know, the combination of a high walk rate and home runs, especially in that ballpark, are going to be tough. But he does have talent and he can get strikeouts. So I think he should be owned because he does have value, you know, on those road starts. So, you know, these are guys that are going to require a little bit of maintenance. You're not just going to set it and forget it, but I do think they should be owned in most leagues.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like the point about the road starts because one of the Colorado pitchers, like you mentioned. So could be a lot of fun if you guys picked him up for 2 starts this week against the Giants or the A's and the Giants in Mahle's case. You're sitting really, really pretty right about now. So something to really hang your hat on. Let's talk about a pitcher that's kind of struggled of late, was on fire to start the year, had like a sub-2 ERA. After back-to-back rocky starts, Marcus Stroman's ERA is up to 2.96. XFIP still only 3.95. Not horrible, but from what happened, you know, in his first 6 starts to his last 2, massive differences. Are you concerned that maybe we're seeing the Stroman we've seen in recent years that really wasn't fantasy viable?
Yeah, I mean, I did like that he increased his slider usage because at least he was getting more strikeouts. You know, he was almost unusable when he was getting like 6.5 strikeouts per 9. But so that's kind of a nice addition. But, you know, I think he still just kind of pitches the contact a little bit too much. He's got that fast infield in Toronto. The infield defense isn't great. So, you know, he's just kind of limited. You know, he's just not going to have a ton of upside just given the way he pitches. But, you know, if he can keep the ground ball rate up, limit the home home runs and keep the slider going, I think he can be kind of a deep league option. But again, you know, even walks have become a little bit of an issue. He's not throwing as many first pitch strikes and his zone rate's down. So I just don't love Stroman as a fantasy pitcher, you know, just the way he kind of attacks hitters. So I know it was a great start and it was nice to see an increase in his sliders, but I don't like him going forward.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was having trouble trying to buy into it because of everything I've seen in years past. I just didn't see it there. And you mentioned the increased slider rate was great. It's kind of what we're hoping with, you know, McHugh and stuff like that. But we've seen what's happened to McHugh of late. We've seen what's happened to Stroman of late. That slider's not sliding. You're pitching batting practice, and it's not going to end well for you. And Toronto's a pretty hitter-friendly environment as well. So something to keep in mind with Stroman. It's fun to watch the shimmy off the mound, but that's about it. Yeah. Enjoy him, not on your fantasy team. All right, let's go to Milwaukee. The messed up bullpen there with you have Josh Hader, who's pitching outstanding. Jeremy Jeffers is back. I'd imagine he'll start getting some saves here pretty soon. But right now, Junior Guerra picked up his second save of the year the other night, and he's pitching really well. Do you have any interest in Junior Guerra if you're searching for saves?
Yeah, breakout out of the bullpen at 34 years old. Here we go. You never know, I guess. You know, I mean, he's done well, but I kind of look at some of his numbers, and he's got a 100 BABIP and a 93% left on base rate. So typically you see that from guys that are just – you never see the 100 BABIP, but the high left on base rate is typically for guys who can really elevate the strikeout numbers, and he's just not a guy that I trust. I don't know. He's still got a high walk rate. I don't trust him. I know that he got a couple of saves going forward, but I don't think he's the guy. And I know that, you know, Hader's not going to get 100% of the saves, but I don't know if there's enough upside there to grab him. If you're really hurting for saves, maybe, but I don't think he's going to help you anywhere else.
Yeah, I'm with you. Got no desire to go running and getting Junior Guerra. I think Jeremy Jeffers will be there soon enough. And it'll be the Jeffers and Hader show until otherwise notified. So even, I believe it was last night or the night before, or yesterday afternoon, Guerra threw the eighth inning. So he didn't even throw the ninth. So something to keep in mind as we move forward. But it was fun while it lasted.
Right.
All right, let's talk about Justin Turner, a guy that's been hitting for decent average all season. And his StatCast metrics jump off the page, especially his hard hit rate and all that good stuff. But he's gone crazy. He had three home runs the other night against Atlanta, homered again last night. He's hitting .391 over his last 11 games, where he's hit safely in 9 of those 11 games. He's crushing the baseball right now, and he's looking a lot more like the Justin Turner we remember. Are you buying into this? Like, he's ready, he's back, we're all in on Justin Turner, or are you still kind of hesitant?
Yeah, I kind of always like Justin Turner when he's healthy. He just it's health is the main issue. You're getting like 125 games out of him. But he's just always been a professional hitter, and I think he just kind of was unlucky. He wasn't, you know, his StatCast metrics were fine before this breakout, but you know, I think he was just kind of catching up is kind of what happened. So I think when he's healthy, you know, he elevates the ball, he hits a lot of line drives, he drives the ball. He's increased his strikeout rate a little bit, but I think that's okay because we're seeing that with guys, they're kind of, you know, going for it a little bit more and kind of increasing their hard contact and barrel rates by doing that. So you're sacrificing a little bit in the strikeout rate, but you're kind of gaining that in power and home runs. So I don't have a problem with him doing that because it's still like at 16%. So he's totally fine. As long as he's healthy, you know, he's a borderline top 50 hitter for sure. So yeah, I'm definitely buying in, but health is just going to be a concern going forward that you just never know.
Yeah, that's always, like you said, the thing with the Justin Turner. You never know when that IL stint is coming and how many IL stints are coming. But while he's hitting, he's one of the best professional hitters in baseball, and he's heating up, so enjoy that while you got it. Michael Chavis, he is one of the prospects that has flourished in his role. 6 home runs already on the season, hitting .293, tons and tons of power. StatCast loves him. What's your thoughts on Michael Chavis? Do you think if he's like maybe there's a slump that he gets sent down, or is he here to stay and he's here to mash?
Yeah, you mentioned the StatCast metrics. He's got a 20% barrel rate, so that's like up with the big boys. So it's still a small sample, but it's enough to kind of show me that the power is legit.
with Chavis. And he kind of does appear to be like a classic power bat. And so I don't know if he's necessarily going to hit for average. I know he's hitting over 300 right now. But he does have kind of some contact issues, some swing and miss. But he's also patient and will take some walks. A lot of fly balls, so I don't see like a 333 BABIP or anything like that that he's got. So that's going to come down. He's got a little bit of a high infield fly rate or pop-up rate, so that's going to hurt his BABIP as well. So I see some, you know, some slumps coming, but I just hope that Boston sticks with him because I think he's got legit power and some upside. I don't want, you know, when Pedroia comes back and Nunez comes back that they just put him back either on the bench or in the minors because I think he's better than those guys right now. So I know Pedroia's done a lot for them, but I don't know if he's, you know, I don't know if he can, I don't know if he can make it anymore. I think he's probably towards the end of the road. So I think Chavis is the guy. They got to keep give him playing time, but I'm just concerned that they're going to, you know, send him back down when Pedroia's healthy.
Yeah, that's the concern I have. I'm really curious to see how that all goes down when it's all said and done. But for now, rock and roll and enjoy it while you can. We got Chris Paddock, another youngster who's just been absolutely amazing. He stormed onto the scene in the springtime. You know, he was great last year in the minors, but really came onto the, like, he might be here this year to pitch scene. And he's been great, especially his last four starts, six innings in all six or more in all four. And his strikeout rate is through the roof. 1.55 ERA, 3.42 WHIP. They've come out and said that they are going to monitor his innings. I think it's like 140-ish innings is what they're going for. And I might have misread that, but that's what I remember. What are your thoughts? If you're a Chris Paddock owner, do you just write it out until the innings limit's up, or do you try to cash in on this cash cow right now?
Yeah, I think in redrafts head-to-head, I'd be looking to trade. But as far as like Roto, I'd kind of ride it out because I think he's, I mean, 140 innings of, you know, it's not going to be sub two ERA, at least I don't think. You know, he's going to have great strikeout numbers, great ratios. I'd ride that out for 140 innings if you can in Roto. But yeah, in head to head leagues, you know, he's not going to do anything for you in September. I don't want to throw a ton of cold water, but the 176 BABIP is, you know, that's going to regress. But if it regresses 100 points, I don't think his ERA is going to balloon to like 350 or 4 or anything like that. So I think he's a guy that's going to give you some really solid strikeout numbers, some good ratios. I do worry a little bit about a third pitch. I think his curveball is thrown about 10% of the time. So the more familiar teams get with him, I wonder how he does the third time through the order. But right now he's untouchable. So, I'm riding high. I'd only trade high if you're in head-to-head leagues.
And that's a great point with the pitch mix is he's pretty much his fastball changeup, and changeup is ridiculous.
It is disgusting. Yeah.
it helps quite a bit, but you know, we used to critique guys like Chris Archer for having two pitches, and there's a few others this year that are having success with two pitches as well. So maybe it's the new modern era where it's like, you know, I'm just going to gas it up and see what you got. Then I'm going to fool you with something else. And, you know, it's old school pitching, just disrupt the timing and not try to do it too many cute ways, I guess. But
right.
We'll see how it goes. Chris Paddock is must-see TV right now. Any guy that rolls in with the swag, he rolls in with the cowboy hat and everything before a game is outstanding. So big fan of Chris Paddock.
Yeah.
Big fan. Yeah. Let's talk about another young pitcher who, you know, we saw him in the playoffs last year make his mark. He's 26 years old, so yes, still young. Kind of scuffled a bit to start the year, but his last three starts, one earned run in every start. Against Washington, the Mets, and at the Mets. He has six or more Ks and eight straight starts this season, a 4.25 ERA, a 3.32 xFIP. Brandon Woodruff has a lot of good positive regression things looking his direction, even on the StatCast metrics. But are you concerned with Brandon Woodruff, or are you thinking, I'm gonna buy on this guy while he's getting good?
I kind of like him, and I think the Brewers don't have depth at starting pitching, so I don't know who else they would turn to. So I think he's got some leash there. But I really like what I've seen. He's got a 30% called strikes plus swinging strike rate. You know, the one thing that's going to come down is a 385 BABIP. That's certainly not going to last. So that's why I think you see those FIPs and XFIPs that are so low. A 23% K minus walk rate is fantastic. So
Again, his park's not great, so I don't love that for him going forward. But I think he's a guy that should be owned. I kind of liked him coming in. I liked him more than Corbin Burns. I thought he was a little bit more experienced, and he's kind of showing it right now. So I'm kind of buying into Woodruff going forward, I think.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Woodruff. He dominated the Nationals yesterday. Yeah. I think there's good stuff there, especially when it comes to strikeouts. He's going to help himself out a lot with the swing and miss skills that he's showcasing out there. So big fan of Woodruff and seeing what we got with him going forward. Let's talk about Jack Flaherty. He really, really burst onto the scenes last year. People were hyped on him this year. It's kind of been a roller coaster ride with him. For the most part, it's full, like three earned runs or more and a lot of starts. 4.32 ERA right now with a 3.54 xFIP. Not striking out a ton of guys most starts. What's your thoughts on Jack Flaherty? Are you concerned or do you think he's still got a lot left to fix and he'll be okay?
Yeah, it's interesting. I threw a little bit of cold water on him before the season started because I think he was due for some regression because of his walk rate. I think he was pretty fortunate in terms of walk rate and BABIP and those kinds of things. But his increased velo is interesting to me. But I've watched him a couple of times. I watched him play the Cubs and I watched him another live start. And it seems like, I mean, he's just cruising. I mean, he's mowing guys down. You can see his swing and strike rate's good. So he gets swings and misses. His K rate doesn't necessarily reflect how good his stuff is, but he seems to lose it. It seems to be like one inning, either the second or third time around, he gives up a hit, walks a guy, and then he's just kind of spirals from there and he can't seem to find the plate. And I don't know if he's nibbling too much or he just loses a little bit of control. And it's usually just one bad inning. And that's why his numbers have kind of inflated. So he seems very close to kind of being a dominant pitcher, but it just seems like every start he has just that one bad inning. So I don't know. I mean, I feel like I want to buy in, even though I was kind of against him a little bit coming into the season. But until I see him kind of be able to put together a couple of nice starts without kind of breaking down, I'm kind of staying away a little bit. But those are kind of my thoughts on him.
Yeah, I'm with you because he's not looking as dominant as the guy we remember last season. Like, he's had a couple of really good starts, but the rest of the starts, like you said, he pitches well. He has a blow-up inning, and he's really not fooling people, it seems like, at times. It's just not that guy that we expected to kind of be that ace this year. And maybe it'll turn. He's super young. So he could be tipping pitches. It could be just minor things. I don't know. But he doesn't seem like he's fooling anybody. He's not living on the edge and locating well, it looks like. So.
Right.
We'll have to see what comes with Flaherty, but good thing is he's not going anywhere, so he'll figure it out hopefully, or we just keep targeting him in fantasy. So it's one or the other. Last guy I want to bring up here because he's been really quiet this year. It was a couple of years ago, Jonathan Scope was a home run machine in Baltimore. Last year didn't do much. Free agent, went to Minnesota. Pretty quiet start to the season, but now he's hit safely in all but two games since April 28th. Hitting really well, hit 324 over that time, two home runs, three doubles, so not a ton of pop, but still waking up is the best way I'll say it with Jonathan Scope. And power comes in bunches with him, and Minnesota's a lot livelier than people think. What's your thoughts on Jonathan Scope going forward? Because he's available in a lot of leagues right now.
Yeah, Scope, I've never really been a fan of him just because of his approach. And I kind of – it's maybe just my hard-headedness, but I kind of need to – change, like with Javi Baez, he's obviously
proving me wrong. I'm still hard-headed on that one, don't you worry.
He's still proving me wrong, but Scope's kind of in that same, he's cut from the same cloth. He's kind of just underwhelming profile because he's just so aggressive. He swings outside the zone 44% of the time, and so he makes a lot of weak contact. But because of that, his strikeout rate's, in check. He does swing and miss a ton, but because he's just constantly swinging, he does put the ball in play. So he doesn't walk a bunch. He doesn't strike out a ton either, but he makes a lot of contact. Like, he's a volume guy. He'll make a lot of bad contact, but he'll make some good contact as well. So I think given the properties of the ball or whatever's going on with the ball this year, that's the last time he had 32 homers, I think, in 2017 with Baltimore. So, given the way the ball is flying out, he's definitely someone who's kind of back on the radar a little bit. I didn't like him coming into the season, but that was without knowing what's going on with the ball. So
Yeah, I think that's kind of the silver lining is looking at it that way. He's a guy that's going to put a ton of balls in play because he doesn't walk a lot and doesn't strike out a lot. So, you kind of got to stick with him if you're going to play him because he's going to compile some numbers, but there's going to be some slumps in there. So, you know, he's not my type of guy because he doesn't have any speed either. But, you know, I think for the way he's rolling right now, I think you got to roll with him.
Yeah, in deeper leagues, I'd say if you're looking for power, I definitely would hate Jonathan Scopes, like you mentioned, with the ball changes, the way he's the free swinger. He's barreling it up 11% of the time right now. That's a career high. 38.5% hard contact rate, second best in his career. Most of the X stats, they're going to show a little bit of regression, but not bad. You know, 284 average compared to his X batting average is 278. So what he's doing, I'm with you. We've never seen him sustain stuff like this. But the stats are showing it. I'm not saying like, you know, 10-team leagues, maybe not even 12-team leagues. But 15-team leagues, I could see like a middle infield viability here or even a second base if you're hurting for injuries or something. Definitely a streamable option. I don't know what your opinion is. I'd rather go gamble on Jonathan Scope than Gino Urshela, but yeah. That's just me.
No, I would as well. Yeah, no, I agree with you there because he's definitely going to get more playing time.
So, yeah. That'll wrap up the list of guys we have. I pulled up the two-start list, and we don't have to go super deep. This could be like yes or no type answers. I got the CBS page up here because it's just convenient the way they do it here. But just looking at some guys that are low-owned on CBS with two starts coming up, I'm not going to ask like the Shelby Millers of the world and stuff, not going there. But like a guy like Nick Kingham for Pittsburgh, he's at Arizona, at San Diego. Does that appeal to you at all?
So I do like Kingham a little bit. I liked him last year and he had his ups and downs. I don't know. He's probably not stretched out enough to go deep against Arizona. I think he only went four innings in his first start. So quality start leagues, he's not going to be great. Maybe by that San Diego start, he could get to six innings, but, he's kind of a deeper league streaming option for sure. I'd say 15 team or deeper. I would stream him.
Yeah, I think he's definitely, you know, TGFBI. He's worse than $5. He threw over 80 pitches. So, yeah, they're stretching him out. You might get four or five innings out of him against Arizona, but San Diego could be a really nice one, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Trent Thornton for Toronto has been very up and down this year. He got beat up the other night, had a couple good starts before that. He's at San Francisco, at the White Sox. Any desire to look at Trent Thornton?
In San Francisco, yeah, I think I think I saw something. The Giants are hitting like 207 with eight homers at home this year.
That sounds about right.
Christian Yelich does that in a week. So I think he's a deep, he's a deep, deep streamer against San Francisco. The White Sox, they're a sneaky, you know. They're a little bit better than you think. They've got some decent bats there. I don't love that one as much.
And let me preface before we go on to the listeners that this is the current two-start approach that could easily change over the weekend when they maybe move things around. Freddy Peralta, they've used the opener with him this last time, and he looked great. Assuming they stick with that philosophy, he pitches at Philadelphia, at Atlanta, not the friendliest of situations. What's your thoughts on Freddy Peralta?
I don't know if I them. Yeah, those are tough opponents. I know it's on the road, but those are tough opponents for him. And I just don't know. You know, I like that they're using an opener with him because he does throw fastballs like 80% of the time. So he can only go through the order twice at the most. But even in his when he was starting, he couldn't make it through a second time. So I'm not sure I trust. He's obviously, you know, you're not getting a quality start from him if they use an opener. But I'm not sure I trust him against those opponents.
On the road is tough.
Yeah.
Mike Fiers coming off his no-no where he threw 131 pitches. Usually this next start's not ideal, but he has two starts next week. He's 30% owned on CBS leagues. He's at Seattle and at Detroit. The Detroit one stands out to me. Seattle hit and miss. Do you trust Mike Fiers away from Oakland?
In Detroit, yeah, I would. So you said the first one's in Seattle, right? Is that correct?
Yep, in Seattle, yeah. And then at Detroit.
So if you're in weekly leagues, that's a tough call because if it was daily, I'd be sitting him in Seattle and then definitely pitching him in Detroit. Because I think Yeah, historically, like you said, guys coming off of 130 pitch innings, no hitters are usually. I don't like the Seattle start, but I do like the Detroit start.
Okay, there's a couple more here. We don't have to talk about them, but just to bring into people's mind, Danny Duffy's got two starts at home against Texas at the Angels. That could be interesting off of his last start against Houston. And then Ronaldo Lopez at home against Cleveland, at home against Toronto. He's been pitching pretty well, so two guys to keep in mind as well. But the other ones are pretty low-owned guys prior to that, and we'll see how it kind of shakes out over the week. All right, Max, that'll wrap us up for episode 169. Before we finish it for good, why don't you let everybody know what you got going on and where they can find you?
Sure, you can check out my site at freestats.com. I'm over at Twitter, pretty active over there, so hit me up with some questions at freestats. I write a couple of articles, a two-start pitcher article, and then covering all the starting pitcher matchups over at Pitcher List, and then write a weekly risers and fallers article over at Fantasy Pros. So yep. Check it out.
Yep, lots of great stuff there with Max. And Max, it's always fun talking baseball with you. Thanks for joining me again for this episode of Bench with Bubba. And we, like I said last time when I was true to it, we'll do it again sometime.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me back on, Bubba. It was a great time, so thanks again.
No, thank you. Everybody, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 169 with Max Fries. Catch you guys later.
Hey, Drew Scott here, and I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.